Welcome, everyone, to the last episode of Rugby Bits' review of Chasing the Sun. I cannot believe we've gone to the last one. It feels like yesterday, Sharky. I mean, well, 5 weeks ago that we did episode one, and we decided out of the blue that we wanted to review all the episodes and didn't think that, 5 weeks later, how enjoyable it would be. I mean, I think it's been a great journey for the both of us. We had Jared last week coming in, and then, but this episode five now, it's just incredible. You know, I mean, I even put up my Chasing the Sun 2 mug as well. I thought I needed it for the last episode. But what a roller coaster of a journey. Before we dive deep into the first last episode, Shark, I mean, Chasing the Sun 2, I mean, your initial, if you look back now on all five, what are your first thoughts? And thanks for joining us, bud, again.
Yeah, hi, my man. So good to be back. I can't believe it's done, but the thoughts were, I didn't expect to be so anxious. Like the anxiety was real almost in every episode. I didn't think that they'd be able to get better at sort of bringing the personal side in with the players, and I thought they did that really, really well. But yeah, I was expecting some banter, but I didn't expect what they brought in terms of that. So I was looking forward to a good one. I was hoping it was going to be a little bit more chilled. But yeah, as I said, like the anxiety is real. Like I think 10W not only brought out an incredible show for us to watch, but I mean, they also created the next generation of freedivers. Everyone every Sunday gets to hold their breath for an hour, and it's absolutely incredible.
I was, you know, I look a lot of questions from everyone, mates asking me, and general people asking, like, what do you think of Chasing the Sun 2? Ever since they announced it last year that it's coming. And I think my thing was, like, I don't think it was going to be as emotional as the first one. You know, you think of my Pimpy story and you think of the journey. But I was like, I'm going to be interested in how they capture the... how they capture, like, how close those games were, because for me at heart it was a rugby story. Yes, they say it was a story for South Africa, but I think what the Springboks had transitioned to come 2023 was that they were a great rugby side. They were World Cup champions, but this was going to be the most heavily contested Rugby World Cup, and the Springboks were right in that mix. And you know, the rugby was becoming the story. Yes, they played and they gave us hope, but they sort of went away from that narrative, and the rugby was their story and the way they played, and can they defend? Because in the day, it's all good and well giving back hope, but sure, you're trying to win a World Cup here. Like, can we defend it? And we have to play some good rugby to do that. And the way, for me, they captured that, the rugby essence, the like Felix Jones, we'll get to him as he's my unsung hero, but like his conversations nonstop. And there's a lot more rugby in this one, more technical terms. We had a scrumming episode where scrumming featured heavily. Like, I love that as a pure rugby fan, but there's still the sense of, you know, the Dion Fury story with his dad, and the way that they found that marriage with TNW looks between the rugby story, which, and the guy, the personal stories the guys told. And I love that. And I think, you know, like at the end, the last episode just summed up the Springboks so well. And the story as well, because yes, as you know, they were planning for the All Blacks. Jacques makes that speech about you are at your own script, but I thought that summed up for me the entire five episodes. I mean, I definitely thought it lived up to the hype and then some.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, Felix touches on it when he's like, in 2019, they just moaned about the way we played, and now in 2023, we're spreading it and they're moaning about the way we play. I think one thing that is probably highlighted the most out of this is that Jacques Nienaber has seen the strengths and weaknesses of the team and the players, and they've created an incredible hybrid squad. You know, if you look at the journey, we've gone like 5-3, 6-2, 7-1s, players in different positions, 4 scrum halves. Like, they've created a hybrid squad, and the players with the ability to really change it up against a different opposition. Like, everything was about the Springboks and themselves and they touch on it about a couple of episodes ago about how you can get lost in how an opposition plays. But we really just like saw what we can do as individuals and the sum of the parts, putting it together in different ways for different opponents. Because the truth is, you know, playing Scotland, playing Ireland, playing France, England, New Zealand, they all offer something different. But we've managed to change our way and make it unique to ourselves, ironically, and go on to win it. It's amazing.
I'm so excited now, obviously. I mean, on a regular post announced that all episodes will be on Rugby Pass, and you know what the world gets to see. I mean, I can't wait for the rest of the world to see this. And you know, I mean, I know some people are going to be watching now because they've been waiting for all five to come, so they want to binge. And I'm excited to see, because I want the whole world to see. Like, I understand the boxer got it almost felt like an us versus the world sort of thing, which is work for us. And you know, we praise the All Blacks. And for how they change the game, and you know how they're always creating new things. And I hope people watching this from other world, like watch Chase the Sun 2, and have appreciation of how we actually are innovators ourselves. The things that our coaching staff does, and now you get an explanation as to how they do it. You know, like the All Blacks just told us not to be dicks and sweep the sheds, but like at least with the Springboks, is a full on there's conversations. There's meetings, there's coaches not trusting their judgment, there's players going, what the hell is going on? So I hope the rest of the world, but when they can see that what the Springboks doing is changing rugby. It's innovative, it's fresh. Just because it comes with fucking teams that are physically and driving malls, it doesn't mean like it's not innovative.
Absolutely. And what Chasing the Sun and Chasing the Sun 2 has done, like seriously, has changed the landscape of watching rugby and seeing what happens internally, because we were privy to conversations that I've never seen before. We're privy to some pretty deep things and some pretty personal stuff. That's just like on squad announcements. I mean, Stalker was when they were trying to pick the squad for the final, and they kind of made it clear that 5-3 wasn't going to be an option. He quickly popped up and he's like, "Yeah, no, I agree. 6-2 is definitely the answer." He's always hunting for more of his backs to be in the mix. But yeah, we saw some incredible stuff and some insights, and just what an amazing setup that the Springboks have, and how like they really open everything up to discussion. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think Jacques Nienaber was totally sold on a 7-1 bench before the World Cup final until that meeting, because he said, like, right, I'm sold. So that to me makes it look like he was probably more leaning towards a 6-2.
Yeah, 100%. But let's dive into episode 5, the last one. I think we've got to start with the episode start. I mean, what a start. So Tom Curry, first of all, I'm like, okay, so we're not even going, like we had Bongi crying at the end of the last episode. So we're not even gonna like ease in to like, okay, like with Bongi, like, no. So Tom Curry, I was like, oh yeah, geez. My initial takeaway, shock with that, is obviously it happened. When Rassi spoke about it, I was where Rassi camp was. Just make a decision already. If it's banned, it's banned. But it's a World Cup final, and that took away from a lot in the week, because we kept telling them every week, Tom Curry, Tom Curry, Tom Curry. And it just took away from, it's a World Cup final. The Oak needs to play rugby. It made that story into something where, like, I was like, if you just say a decision we made after the World Cup final, but they let the Oak play and then deal with it. Chuck, when you go back to that week, what are your thoughts?
It was crazy. Like, emotionally, we'd come out of two strong weeks, or pretty hectic ones, like against France and England. And then, like, that was happening. We're now in the final. We're starting to believe that we can go back-to-back. And this is starting to come through, and it's just overshadowing. And I just remember it just went crazy. And I think Sia Khaleesi sums it up brilliantly. He just says the English media fucked up because they were stoking that fire. Like, to be fair, if it was the other way around, South Africa, the media, the podcast, all of us would have been absolutely going balls to the wall too. So it was just messed up. And how do you manage that, though, as world rugby? You know, like, this is the last week of an incredible tournament. Can you afford to just say, cool, we'll sweep this under the rug for this week and we'll deal with it next week? Surely they've got to deal with it there and then. Like, it's quite a serious allegation. So I think what they did was right. I don't know how much time that they if they really had to take that long. I can't remember when was it released? Like on the Wednesday or the Thursday or something like that. Could have been the
Thursday,
Thursday,
they
yeah.
just said he could play.
Yeah. Like the preparation for that, for the team and for the players, the individuals and the squad must have been quite crazy. But yeah, I think they would definitely had to deal with it there and then, just perhaps a little quicker. I mean, it came out on the Saturday, Sunday
Yeah.
that, yeah, so.
I think there could have been a way to do it. Like, even if you're spending a day, hey guys, come in on Monday, you miss training, you're going to spend the whole day in, if it's a hearing, it's a hearing, or investigation. I think that, especially with the World Cup final, I think you don't want something like that. I mean, the allegations are serious, and yes, they will be dealt with, but something like that, especially when you could say, like, is the information coming out? There's no information coming out. It's just lingering and lingering and lingering, and the poor Oak has to prepare for a World Cup final. The team is going to prepare his team, and you might not have your starting hooker. And if it comes out on Thursday, you can't fly out hooker now on Thursday morning and say, hey, can you fly out? Land Friday morning, or maybe or land Saturday morning, and oh, by the way, as you land, you're playing a World Cup final in the evening. So hopefully you flew first class, and you're basically laying down for 12 hours. But yeah, I think it was hectic. But also, Sharky, it summed up. I love when Trevor spoke about, the memes and stuff. And I mean, it summed up South Africa. There are plenty of jokes around Beta Kant and guys playing. I mean, seeing that, I forgot how amazing the internet was that week.
Yeah, that's what social media was created for, stuff like that. And I think Cooks, you summed it up so well in the beginning when you just said it's us versus the world. And it in hindsight, it definitely played into our favor because we had that in 2019. We've had that forever since 2019, maybe even a little bit before. But 2019, the Lions tour, like everyone was just like, oh, you guys are still playing your same game plan. You guys are so shit. Cool. We haven't played rugby for a year and a half, you know? And then we went on to win it. And then everyone the same, oh, man, low-hanging fruit, man. Oh, you know, they're not expensive, they're not this, they're not that. So it galvanized, and like Felix Jones touches on it, everyone touches on it some way through, and just about that, like it, basically the Springboks have just said, like, we are really cool with each other. One thing we picked up was just how amazing they are as individuals and how the friendships, and everyone knows each other so well, and just basically said, like, screw you know.
And something else that flipped got swept. Not so like, but like they got sprung upon us. We're dealing with Tom Curry shenanigans here. The Boks have released their team, the whole World Cup. Like, I think if they played on a Sunday, the team came out on a Wednesday, or two. But they released their sides fairly early. But we 7-1 gets put out. I'll never forget the. I think Jared put a message in our group saying it's 7-1, but then we all dangling as well, and the team comes out and then you go, wait, there's no scrum off on the bench. Like, that was the first thing that I saw. Wasn't it the seven? It was like, there's no scrum off on the bench. Shocking. Can
Yeah.
you remember the first time you saw that? Boom, that graphic. Boom, here's the
It
spring
was
starts.
crazy. Like, Kurt Reiner has been player 23 or 22 in the one game, but he's been the only backline player in every 7-1. Like, they focus on him pretty well. And
He
like, he was gutted.
started
Like,
the quarterfinal and the semi.
and he was part of every 7-1 bench against New Zealand and Ireland. That graphic dropped. We were scrambling, man. Like, I remember, like, I remembered that those tweets going out, like, right, Damian Delendi can play 12 and 13, and he can play wing maybe. Chesson Colby can play 9, and he can play 15 or the other wing if need be. Okay, right. Damian Willemse, he can play 15, he can play 10, he can play 12. Okay, cool. And wing. And then you're scrambling, like, you're listing the whole back line and every single position they play just to almost kind of make yourself feel okay. It's not for everyone else, it's for you. You're like, okay, we're fine. But on that, when that conversation with Chesson Colby was incredible, like, I totally know how he felt. Not no, I mean, when you get called into a room like that, you know you don't belong there, you know you've never been called, it's not your place. What have you done wrong?
And also,
Jerry
like,
Cooks.
sorry, I do love the fact that, because you start to process the information of going, okay, and like, can I just get some reps in first? Because I mean, I love the conversation they had there because, and that's what I love about documentaries. You can see it's not just like, okay, boom, guys, this week was 7-1 or Rice and Jocko this week. It's thought out where they have conversations, honest conversation of and the weighing up pros and cons. And because I love how, like, one gets eliminated, boom, 5-3. No, against the All Blacks, we need a fresh pack at all times. So it's 6-2, 7-1. And also, like, I love the justification that Felix Jones eventually gets to, and he goes, okay, we've done this twice. Against Ireland, we let a lot of opportunities out there. Against the All Blacks, we gave them a hiding. So it has worked. It's just, like I said, one, it worked very well. Other time, we take opportunities. So we could have won both those games. But also, like, I still love the fact that the documentary shows that we've all been, in work meetings or, your coaching meetings where, I mean, certainly when I've coached, or even our coach, when you've named a team and on the Tuesday and you go to practice and you're still not 100% sure, you're like, I'm still not sure about this. And you could see, like, even Jacques at the stage, like, it's a good shot, but it gets, like you said, there's a sense of, oh, this is a risk. And I love the fact that the coaches know that, and they're like, and they're still, I don't, and like, it wasn't like gung-ho and immediately like, this is the plan.
Yeah. The conversation with Chet and Colby was incredible because I love, all the players said they will play anywhere to play for
Yeah.
Springboks. But I thought he took that moment and he took it in a little bit. He had to think about it. He didn't like jump out and go, yes, I'm in. He had to think about it. He's like, cool. Because on the 7-1 benches in the past, they definitely would have had that conversation with him, even though there was a scrum off on the bench. And there's never been a time where he's been second choice nine. I don't recall. I know he's played there when there was a yellow card, I think, but I know that he's been there in the mix. But this is real. Like this is different. This is a Bongi Mbonambi injury away from putting a guy in a space that he really doesn't belong. And no disrespect there. Like they talk about like Dion Fury, he's going to play 77 minutes in a World Cup final in a position he hasn't played in yonks. And the same was with Ches and Colby playing at nine. But I loved how he went through it. Like he's like, cool, I want to do it and I'm keen and I totally buy into it, but I need some help. Like I need to do some reps. I need to work through some stuff. I thought it was brilliant.
No, I thought it was amazing as well. And when Rassie and Jacques announced the team, and Rassie speaks about, I mean, that scene there, the next about 10 minutes there, are some of the most incredible piece of work that the guys have put together in the box. Because I mean, from Rassie announcing the team and saying that guys will be disappointed, but it's not for you, it's for South Africa. And I love that he says that because that's always been the mission, right? But then obviously when they announce the team and the very next person you're talking to is coming going, my fork. Like that was one of the worst ones. And then he ends up with that role in my week is to serve. But I love the fact that these orgs at TNW and Chesna Sanders show the human element. Because most, like I said, I've seen other episodes, most sports documentaries, you don't see this part. You see the happy-go-lucky, yeah, we made this call. Yeah, sometimes it's bleak. But you want to hear, because this just, I mean, he started the last two games, quarterfinal and a semi. In his mind, there's no way he's not playing a World Cup final. There's no
100%.
way he's not playing a World Cup final. Because even him, he probably started that year, 2023, as a third choice come up. Because it was when Jaden started 2022, most of it. And then Faf sort of came back into form, and then Korver sort of, Kobus always kind of filled in. Faf's not there, Kobus is there. And then he sort of found him where the starting scrum off. And so in his mind, he's probably thinking, if push comes to shove, if you've got 7-1 or 6-2, I'm playing. Because you can't not have a nine in the bench.
Absolutely. And he doesn't just cover nine. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like Billy covers 15, can play on the wing, but you can put him at 10 as well. But like Rana covers different options. It's like with Willemse there, you've got your 10 covered. It was very interesting, but I love it. Like the emotions of it. And the Olivetny, but Olivetny, like we don't know what's going on. We don't know the human element. Like, it's there, but we fans are so removed from it because we don't see it week in and week out. We saw it for 5 weeks now out of the last, you know, 4 years. There's so much more, like, you know, Manny Lubbock playing every single game of the World Cup.
Yeah.
You know, that's what a lot of people forget. He played every game Box except the final.
Box have won every game that he started at 10.
Yeah. And, yeah, like, there was a lot of disappointment through a lot of the spaces it happened. But that one with Ronak was good because it hit him. It hit him hard. And I love how he just said, cool. Like, also, everyone allows, like, him to – he's like, cool. I felt sorry for myself for a couple of minutes. Everyone would have given him that space if it was a different situation, like if they were talking about it live or whatever. But everyone's got to have that because that's real. That's life. That's how it is. We have disappointments. It's how you get up. You know, how many times, as long as you get up, more times you've been knocked down, you're golden.
100%. I mean, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like, you know, even the first episode, remember Dwayne, how he was pushed over on the bench, and it's opening game of the World Cup. I want to play. And at the end of the day, like, yes, it's a team sport, 100%. But the guys have goals. Oh, players have goals. And I think the culture of the Springboks, it was so evident in that 5 minute, that 3 minute, when he knows that he has a room to be disappointed, but he doesn't die in the disappointment. He goes, okay, now my role is to serve. Now my job now for the week is to serve this team, because that's what this team needs to win the World Cup. And it just shows that the players have the option to allow themselves to be themselves, the option to be themselves, and also the players have bought into the system. Because if the players haven't bought in, you don't go from being disappointed to, okay, now I'm ready to serve. No, you'd be disappointed the entire week, and you'd be like some guys, coach, send me home. Some guys in the sock, bring down the morale. But it shows the culture in the Springboks, and also the cultures. And again, my favorite thing about it is, it's a culture built on, you know, the guy, the leadership group and the coaches, but also on winning. Because at the end of the day, Cooper Zanok played a similar role in 2019 and he's got a World Cup winner's medal. So you having won a World Cup, there's certain things that, especially the players like the Moody and Curtly Aronsa and Ox, they come into a culture of winning where we sacrifice here. At your union, you can play 70 minutes if needs be. But here, you might only play two games and win. But do you want to win a World Cup or not? It's very simple, because that's the role you need to play.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, they say losing is a habit, but you want to create, and people always strive to create a winning culture. And a winning culture and the succession planning behind that, if you keep everything along that line and the conversations are the same, the players are having this similar, you know, the language is the same all the way through. It's great. Cooks, I wanted to ask you, when did Achia become like the leading man? Because he's in every episode, he's adding advice all over the show. This guy's got some hidden talents that we didn't know about.
And I told him, because remember, Achia doesn't play club rugby in between the World Cups because you've been here the fires. So like, listen, you're back now. So now you have to do extra work at Chasing the Sun for all those games that you've missed in between and all those tests that you've missed. So, and it's fair. Like, he's going to give back somewhere to all those games he missed. But that's why I'm still worried about him playing rugby now. I mean, Achia needs to start his 3-year sabbatical so we can see him in 2027. But he was great. I mean, you can't help but listen to him when you're that flippin' tall and that good. But there's so many like guys that they just chipped in and it made me laugh in all five episodes, but Erica definitely became a leading man. But shocking of a speech. I mean, come on.
You've got to, what is it? When South Africa see obstacles, they almost, it fertilizes their creativity. That was one. But his conversation, when he was talking, because we don't see that much of him, like, he's very quiet. He's quite analytical. He's doing other stuff. That chirp and that sort of speech beforehand about like individuals, like everyone's always brought back to that humble place where they were. Like, you have written your own story. You don't deserve to be, you shouldn't have been here, but you deserve to be here because you've changed everything. You've looked in the face of that all the time and you've made a difference. And about like writing the script and changing the movie, and oh man, it was incredible. And then he turns around after, he's like, I'm getting a bit emotional. I was sitting there like almost bawling, but yo, amazing.
I just love, yeah. At a point, like Philip getting emotional. He goes back to his clip, and I do like the fact that it wasn't. You could see, it wasn't. He didn't wake up and write that. That's just his pure thoughts, just in his mind about how he feels about. And what I loved about it, Chuck, I think it. He summed up the 3 year period from the end of the Lions tour to where they were now, where we had gone from the darlings of world rugby to. You know, just everyone just hating the Springboks, you know, from the videos. And he speaks about, like, you know, like when he starts, it's like just an obstacle. It's just what do you call it? You just like just an obstacle for the All Blacks to hurdle over, just a hurdle. Like all those things, a hop, skip, and a jump to world champions. And he speaks about like how no one wanted them to be there. And like he summed up so well because no one wanted the Springboks to be there. Like at the end of the day, like the one that's most like, oh, they're not gonna get past the group stage. And it almost felt the Springboks had to hop over all these obstacles because World Rugby did not want a Springbok in the Springboks in the final. They wanted to see France. They wanted to see Ireland versus France. And he speaks about, like I said, because it takes them back to that humble place of where they grew up. Like, you're not meant to be. That's when he got me. I was like, oh, okay, now. And he's like, and that's what I was like, that's what drives these folks because at the end of the day, they know where they come from and their stories. And for them to be where they are is an achievement in itself. And the coaches know when to pull their heartstrings and to remind them of how far they've come. So, and not just let this game dictate who they are. They've made changes, their lives have changed, their families have changed. And the way he speaks about that, and you can see how emotionally he gets, and he shows how much he cares about each and every single player. And I thought he summed up exactly what the Springboks are and what this and what their management group are about. And like, and it made me think, like, Shocking, but why do teams always choose and insisting on trying to give us any more ammo? Because all Shocking about say that's enough ammo to drive the Springboks for entire World Cup campaign. But then the opposition, then the English will add the bongi thing, and then the Irish will add, oh, this team plays such shit rugby. And then, you know, these guys saying they shouldn't even be there. I'm like, we don't need Oaks to rile us up. Like, just let us almost, I would say, like, be respectful to the. Do the Springboks all the time. Just smile, play the CS story, the documentary all week. Praise us. Don't go there and poke the bear all week. What is going to happen?
It's so true. Like, there, if you look at the media, because I think like the media would also be a little bit of how World Rugby feel in a, about certain things. So the 7-1, like everyone shat the bed when we did 7-1, and then we went and called it in the final, and then like we got to change the laws now. Now this has got to happen. We want faster games. And every single time there is that hurdle or someone does try and change our script, we're like, no, hang on a second, we've got a different movie to show you. And it's true, like we're constantly, it's weird, like to think that we've gone back to back, we've beaten the Lions, but we are still probably rated third or fourth to
Yeah.
win the World Cup before the World Cup. Like it was Ireland and France and, you know, New Zealand were always going to be in there, and then maybe us. Like they were talking about, you know, whoever we faced in the quarterfinal, we would lose to, and it's amazing. Like I love that because that's always about being number one, but thinking you're number two.
Yeah.
Always, you've got to train and prepare like you are not the best in the world, and it's clear that that's what's happening. And every single time some chop opens his mouth or some idiot says something that's in like at World Rugby or at in an opposition team. You know, Russie and Jacques just be like, cool, I'll just put that in my notebook. We'll tap into that a little bit later. We don't need to do that now. And they've just got everything set up. And that's just how we are. You know, we were the best team in the world. We ranked number one. We've got 4 World Cups, two on the trots. And we won the second one against all the odds.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even remember what odds we had before the World Cup, but I know it wasn't the best. And thank you very much.
Before we get in the game, you know, I find this interesting. You know, that the CS Six Nations before France took on Ireland the opening game, there's all that had been mentioned that like this was the dream final, the final that the world wanted, and we didn't get. You know, as when the players are speaking about the rivalry between the Springboks and the All Blacks and the Chasing the Sun 2, And I spoke about the history and what it means and how different it is. And Sunny Bill summed it up. And I said then, I was like, what utter bullshit from like from the Northern Hemisphere and like other people. It's two of the most successful teams in world rugby playing a World Cup final to determine who is the first to go to four. One of those teams is unbeaten. The other is the All Blacks, who's got the best record. That is the dream final. What more do you want? Not of, how often do you get two sides? I mean, obviously, it is great. Yes, some sports, it would be great to have two teams that they won before. But like, unfortunately, to be the man, you got to beat the man. That's a fact. But I thought to myself, like, Sharky, like, man, we got All Blacks and the Springboks in a World Cup final, 1995, and half the world only cares that it was not France versus Ireland, who the teams that they both lost to.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing is, like, the All Blacks going into the World Cup, as they mentioned, like they spoke about it in this episode, was no one was talking about them. Everyone forgot about them. Everyone didn't think they were going to be good enough. And, like, it was the two ugly stepchildren of world rugby that went on to compete in the final. And, yeah, like, it's just, the thing is if Ireland or France had won that World Cup, everyone would have been like, oh, that's, you know, that we expected that, you know.
Yeah.
But sport, you know, you can script your sport movie, but we will change that movie. I love what that Jacques brought this into our world now, because the scripting things, and sport isn't that boring. And that's the beauty of sport, is like anything can happen. We've seen upsets. We've seen all sorts of things happening. And, you know, everyone was building up to this massive, unbelievable Northern Hemisphere final in Paris. You know, it's just written in the stars. And it didn't happen. And everyone's still got a very bitter taste in their mouth about it.
I know, 100%. But then the game starts. I mean, geez, I mean, I must say, Sharky, one thing I did forget about, because of all the shit, all the stress and the worry that had come the second half, I forgot that in the first half, I won't say dominant, but you probably say that we were the better team. I mean, and we had the rubber and we were playing well. But like, just hearing those hits again and how physical that game was, I mean, and, you know, I mean, and it did feel like we were in control going into halftime.
Yeah, it's incredible. I'm not mistaken. I know they showed the Eben hit first, but I think it was the first big hit of the game. He kind of like just opened it up to show a little bit of light. And then Peter Steff was like, no, buddy, I'll bring the sun, you know. And it was amazing. You know, going into probably 60 minutes of the game, I'm shocked that we didn't score a try. Maybe it was even 55 minutes.
Yeah.
We came really close. We really dominated.
Yeah,
we had two really good chances in the beginning of the second half to score. You know, those changed things. I honestly believe if we scored a try in the first half, I don't think the All Blacks would have come back. You know, it would have been another Rugby World Cup 2019 result. But yeah, we took it to them. But we took it to them the best way that we can, because we know what they're going to bring. As I think it was Kwaka was talking about, like, how that they're an attacking team and they're going to bring the attack. And we were just like, cool, you know, we're going to dig our heels in and we're just going to absorb and just carry on doing that. And because of that, maybe we didn't really mentally switch it on in the first half to go and score. And that showed in the second half, where they were just like, come guys, like, we dominate and we should be scoring here. But yeah, there were a couple that World Cup final probably had four very interesting stories about it. You know, that first half, the beginning of the second half, the All Blacks came back. The Kirtley Orange tackle was incredible. I stand by, if Rico Ioane had the ball in the correct hand, he probably had a much higher chance of scoring. But these are the small things that matter. But we cooked in that first half. Like, we did stuff in that first half that reminded me of the end of the second half in the 2019 final, where England were just coming at us with everything they had, and we put up I can't even remember, like a 25 phase defensive set in our 22. And you know, I look at that and like, I'm getting goosebumps. That won us the World Cup final. That moment there in 2019 was what happened. And you know, we hit them hard. We hit them with everything. And they tried to come at us and we just hit them back. And it was, the thing is the velocity and the impact and the just absolutely craziness of those tackles. Like, these are professional athletes. This is not Peter Steptoe tackling a club player, you know? These are guys that are like, have been tackled before. Like, they know how to tackle, they know what shoulder to hit. Like, to hit players back that hard consistently in a World Cup final is, Peter Steph must have been cooking. And so he must have, I reckon he doesn't remember that final. Like, he just, the red mist came down and that was it.
And also, the funny thing about the first half, I mean, I think for me, it was two big incidents. I mean, first, the Bongi one. I mean, losing Bongi that early, I think that was not in the script for any scenario. But, you know, whenever I think about that and the Dion Free thing, it just actually shows what the Springboks are right in terms of sometimes you pick the right man as opposed to, let's say, like, just if the man's character as intangibles that stats can't show. You know, maybe, you know, Johan Krobler had better, I mean, any hooker had better stats than Dion Free, because he didn't play hooker that season at all. But there's certain guys, let's say, man, that stats show this and perform. But there's intangibles there that they're just the character of a man, of what it brings to a group that can't, you can't put that in the stats. And I can't think of a better character and a man to have played that role than Dion Free coming on that early to play a position he's not played in a very long time.
Yeah, they've spoken, the Springbok coaches have spoken a lot about picking the right man and not the best man. Well, not necessarily the best man. And Rassie Rasmus and Jacques Nienaber and like Dion Free himself, they all touch on those worries that we had. Like, when this was unfolding in real time for us, we had those worries. And I know, like, I was a little upset about it. I really thought that we were making a mistake. And again, like a couple of episodes ago, I apologize, but I'm going to apologize to Dion Free again, because that is 100% what it's all about. It's about the right man. And
I think Dion Free would agree with you when they first like well, me, okay.
Like, yeah, no, okay, true.
Okay, I'll do the job, but that's interesting.
Yeah, 100%. And the thing is, and just to kind of wrap that whole thing up about having those right individuals, is the whole team bought into it. You can't do something like that as coaching staff and not have the team buy in. The same is with Ches and Colby being the backup scrum off. The individuals and the collective group need to buy into that. And they bought into that long time ago. When they announced that squad, they bought into that because they knew all along that Dion Free was backup hooker. And then all of a sudden, 77 minutes in a Rugby World Cup final. And it's the right man. Everyone believed, everyone trusted in him. Rusty said, I trust and I'll believe him. Whether he can go all the way or not, I don't know. 77 minutes in a World Cup final for someone that's probably a retreaded hooker, because he's not a hooker anymore. You know, and he's gone and done that. It's incredible. And it just again highlights what sort of a group they've got, what sort of individuals they are, and the people they brought together. And it's the us against the world thing. Like, he's walked out there and gone, oh shit, yeah, I'm playing the World Cup final, but everyone's trusted in me, so I'm going to lift it. And everyone's like, well, hang on, we trust him, so we're going to lift it to help him. And then all of that combines to the perfect storm to bring us number four.
No, 100%. And the second biggest thing that in that first half was the Sam Cane red card. Still a red card. That is a red card.
100%. I mean,
there's no other way. There's no mitigation. And you look at it, it's like, I tried to be as objective as I can and look at it in terms like, can't see, because I mean, the way the cues have gone on about it, and I hadn't watched the final for a while. I'm like, that's a red card. It's the rules sort of state that. And, you know, and I'm so glad the game came good, because, again, I still live by the notion that red cards ruin rugby games, bad tackling ruins rugby games, foul play ruins rugby games.
Well, the game wasn't ruined. It's a red card and it doesn't ruin it. I'll tell you something. Jesse Creel goes off there, we don't win the World Cup. That's the fact that he stayed on. That was, he got smoked, man. He got absolutely smoked. But you're coming from the side, like, he's, I don't think you see that coming. And that's also the other thing. Like, you don't want to put your head in that space. You don't do it intentionally to give someone a red card. Mm. That 100% a red card. It's direct contact. Like, he got smoked. It's definitely a red card in my books as well. Interesting moment. And that galvanized the All Blacks.
Yeah.
You know,
They came out guns blazing doing that. Yo.
they did. But if we'd scored in that second, in the end of that first half, they would have changed. Like they needed, we didn't put the straw that broke the camel's back. We didn't put that on them. We didn't give it to them. I've completely butchered that. But like we didn't put enough on them to break them. And they are mentally strong. They know what we're going to bring. They are mentally, they're incredible. And the Springboks spoke about them highly, and we all know what they can bring, but we just didn't do enough to break them. And they break people a lot. They have been breaking teams forever. Ask the Wallabies. They're still never going to recover from that.
No, 100%. But second half starts here, gets the yellow card. Sia's hair was as short as mine. He would not have got a yellow card because I think he's the top of his hair brushed like Artie's chin, and he's like, well, unfortunately, he's gonna go. But then the All Blacks got back in the game, and then when he said we had the chance to kill the game in start of the second half, Sia doesn't pass that ball there. We score. Arnsa just sneaks in behind Bowden Barrett and on. Because I thought as well, we scored that the game is finished, but then Sia goes off and the game flipped on its head because then we went from being dominant to oh shit. And then man, and then we oh shocking. I'm like, see now the anxiety is coming back now because I'm still thinking about that stress. I mean, there was a stage when the All Blacks came because the problem with the All Blacks, it's different for me. I don't know how you feel with the All Blacks. When other teams keep coming and coming and coming, it's like we can hold them, we can defend. But the All Blacks, like these dogs can score, they can score a try and score another one immediately. I've always said that's their greatest ever trait. They're ready to score two or three tries in a space in a very quick time and sort of blow you out the water. And they always have the quality to score a try out of nowhere. Like I forgot how good Mark Telia was. Like we couldn't touch him. I think I'll say Mark Telia was on a mission to try and beat every single Springbok. Like defender when he was there, and then you look at Jordy Barrett and he's still putting the pump and Richie Mo'unga. But in that period, I mean, we were properly scrambling.
I just want to go back to halftime. Felix Jones, like having chat to the team, that halftime chat was good, but Felix was like, guys, we have 15 to 20 proper, what did he mention? Accurate, clean breakdowns. If we do 15 to 20 accurate, clean breakdowns, we will win this. And I love that. And the Khaleesi yellow card, like bizarrely, there are still people that doubt him as a rugby player and as a captain, but you can clearly see what happened in that game when he went off. The players talk about it. They were like, when he walked on, I mean, even was like, oh, thank goodness he's back. And the All Blacks can want to punch you so quickly, and we know that. And we were hanging on, man. We were hanging on like our lives depended on it. It was for South Africa, man.
Gee, there's a few. I mean, when you go talk to Peter Seth Tutoi, when you, I just loved like whenever they showed the games happening within, you see a ruck, someone gets hit, the next one, Peter Seth is making that tackle, then someone else, boom, then Peter Seth pops up again. I mean, the way he, I mean, we talk about how we hit those Barretts, but just to see that again, arguably one of the greatest Springbok performers of all time. And what I love about the Springboks in finals, we've had performances, I mean, from everyone. I mean, we had Peter Steph in 2023, then Dwayne in 2019, Victor 07. And 95 is probably a collective of moments of Joel Stransky, US tackling Alomu, and then James Moore. Like, 95, but like, since then, like, each player's had a moment, but Peter Steph could have put on probably one of the greatest ever performances I've seen in a Bok jersey.
Yeah, and I love the way Rusty was talking. He's like, Jordy's really long. Like he's long. Don't worry. You're not gonna tackle him high. Just hit him all day. Just hit him all day. And he did. And you mentioned like players that you expected to be involved in that game. Like Aaron Smith, last All Black performance. I think during that haka, he was crying, like it was pretty emotional. We were all over important players, but I tell you the big one was that Richie Mo'unga hit. He got smoked by Eben and Peter Steph Tutoi. I don't think he has ever had to play rugby where he's not solely focused on what he's doing. Like he's always got 10% of his mind, maybe half an eye looking out for some green goblin to come and eat him. And Peter Steph was ridiculous. Like, I mean, for such a quiet guy, I know he's a big human, but for such a quiet guy to just go on. The thing is, he went on for 80 minutes. He just tackled everyone, everything, all the time. It was just nonstop. There were some really important tackles. Siya Kolisi made one great tackle. Dion Fury made an incredible tackle. Jesse Creel too. Like, we had a bunch of individuals doing some great things, but as a whole, we like pulled together. But then you've got Peter Steph. Like, imagine the guys, the Springboks even would have just been like lining up. Peter Steph would have been on the inside or the outside, and they were like, cool, my channel safe as houses, because no one's running here because this guy is going to eat you.
And I mean, there was the fuff quick, ankle tap on Dalton Papali'i in the corner, which stops the line break because, yeah, I mean, I thought the All Blacks, that loss, 25, I thought they were great. As good as they can be. I mean, that was, it took so much scrambling. And like I said, it was almost the collective effort of the Springbok defense coming together, the scramble, the press. All of it had to work that day for us to win the World Cup final. If there's an element of our scramble was off, because against All Blacks, if you don't scramble well, you're cooked. Because they're gonna slice you no matter what. And the guys were talking about like how desperate they were, because now that it's the World Cup final, you know, the playing for South Africa, and you could see the desperation like in the eye and in their eyes, you can see that in their faces and what they're doing when they're just getting up, and guys are making tackles. Peter Steph is getting up making tackles. Dion Fury's bad and bruised, shoulders busted, guys are bleeding, and you can also in the All Blacks, you can see the desperation of the All Blacks are. So, and sometimes you can see the All Blacks giving that look like, shit, these Oaks are not going away. They're not even giving us a sniff to just, and I think the All Blacks always felt like they were just like one pass away, but then someone covers. And that's why I do think also, I still to this day think the All Blacks, that a penalty when Kobe went off, they should have gone for the corner. Instead of that shot. But again, I think for them, they're thinking, just getting hit, being hit so long is so bad. They might be thinking, let's just get ahead, have the buffer, the one or 2 point buffer, and then let's start forcing them to play rugby, and then we can hopefully pick them off, because we've tried having possession, they keep making hits, and it's almost, a part of me felt like, oh, that's them almost like, okay, conceding a little bit. Because normally I thought, the way they were dominating that game at that stage, I'm like, oh, shit, if they go for the corner again, they might actually score. Their maul was going well, their pack was functioning, their scrum was, they were scrubbing well as well.
Yeah, it was, I disagree. I think they should have gone for the points. When last the All Blacks missed two kicks at goal in a knockout game, I don't know when, because they missed the Bowden Barrett conversion and then that Geordie kick. You, as a Springbok fan, as an All Black fan, as an anybody fan, you're expecting one of those to at least go over, if not both. And I agree with you in that they were only thinking of one thing with a game that was so tight. 12-11, you just needed a 1 point lead to win it. That's all they needed. And they knew that. Like, when the conversion was missed, they were like, cool, we've got another chance. We have at least one more chance. We spoke about it in previous episodes, about just that one more chance. You know, they're going to get one more chance and they're going to do it. And yeah, they didn't. And we managed to hold on. I'll be honest with you, when Kobe got carded and they like got the kicking tee on, that was it. I think, I can't even remember how much time was left in the game. There wasn't a lot left. I think there might have been five or 7 minutes left.
It was eight minutes when he went off. He knew he was.
Yo, that's imprinted on you, Cooks. You know, yeah. That's imprinted on you properly. So 8 minutes, you trust any side to win it in those 8 minutes as well. And that's what's interesting. Personally, I much prefer that they went for the kick, because I'd rather chase a penalty to win it than try and score a try. If they score a try, we don't come back.
You know, it's such a funny World Cup final, because watching as a fan is, okay, we've won it. Oh, now we've got a chance to seal it. Oh, shit, see us off. Okay, now we're scrambling. Okay, see us back on. Okay, we're holding on, we're scrambling. Then they score, you go, shit. Okay, now we're in big trouble. Then we sort of come back, we hold the fort. Then Kobe goes off, they're like, no, the game is done. And you're like, okay, cool, we're winning again. Like, the rollercoaster of emotions we went through in that World Cup final, and to get to that last scrum where Jasper Visser, the carrier of his life, not, and the angle they showed, I love the angle showed from the blind side, and you could see him picking up and going, and the actual, I think in about six or like almost like four or five All Blacks on him, trying to rip that ball out, and him going, I refuse to go down. I refuse to let this ball go.
It was, he was only on for 3 minutes or 4 minutes. That carry, I honestly think, I just want to go back. I will say something. I keep watching that Quakka Smith turnover, and I look at that and I'm just like, that's a penalty every single time. I get so worried about it that, like, with his hand on the ball, but we managed to seal it. So just wanted to add that, because I still think it's suspect. But Jasper's getting set up for that scrum, and you know what movie's going on in his mind. His mind is simply, the time is up, the ball's just got to come to me, and then I've just got to do what I've got to do. And I never expected him to be able to do it with so many people, because he picked it up and took some contact. I think Aaron Smith got in on him or someone. I don't even
and
think.
He was going backwards as well.
And then he kind of reset and then started driving more, and then more players were swarming in. I almost feel like there wasn't a Springbok there. I think they were all just sitting there watching the party, but it was incredible. The best part, and I love it. I love knowing when the final whistle is going to go, when you watch it back. And then you look at the players, and the players have realized this is a maul. They've heard the ref call the maul, and they're like kind of going to celebrate, but they need the whistle first. Yeah. Even though he's called them all, like, is someone going to do, like, it's not done yet. It should technically be over, but they're kind of there, and then they just let rip.
Oh, man, it was incredible. I mean, oh, the sound of the final whistle. I mean, the relief and the happiness the players faces, and then probably, I keep saying the best. I mean, it was a great episode, but, like, from there to the end, it just becomes incredible. What incredible sports documentary. I mean, shocking. That 2 minutes when the players couldn't describe what they were feeling, just they couldn't actually put into words what they had done. And then it goes back to, then it goes to, I'm literally getting goosebumps now, because then Dion Free talks about him and his dad, and then the tears. So Quakka Smith, of all people, breaking down, talking about, you know, the job they'd done. And then Dwayne, that's when I was broken, when Dwayne came after all of that. I'd held on for Dion and held on for Quakka, and then Dwayne mentioned, you know, to see his kids there, and you think about, obviously, his dad. I don't think his dad ever saw him being a Springbok, you know. And I think, you know, didn't even see him winning World Cups, and then his kids being there, then the shot of him looking up to his dad, I was done.
Totally. Totally, totally wiped a few tears off. Those players trying to describe it, and just, like, they're trying to search for that word, but they know inside, like, there's just no word for it. It was amazing. Dwayne, his story, everyone's story. Dion Fury, his shoulder. Like, how many guys cramped up in that half? Oh, man, it was incredible. I tell you something, trying to watch, to all those who are trying to watch 5 episodes in a row, good luck. That's going to be quite something, man. It's, oh, like, I'm just thinking about this. I'm struggling to put words together. It was just absolutely amazing.
You know, I mean, to see guys, you know, like, it's, and I love this perspective from, you know, guys like Quakka and, you know, Trevor, Dwayne, who've gone back to back, but they have a different sort of type of relation to, like, an ox or a moody, you know, because that's their first one. I mean, from the daydreams coming true. And, you know, for, like, you know, for Dwayne or something like that, and for, like, Dwayne, for them, maybe, like, winning the first one is just, you know, a validation for their careers. And, but, like, now they're a bit older and wiser, and you look back and you think, geez, now my kids are a bit older. They've seen, and you know, and then I think Rassi, you know, he sums it up so nicely at the end. He just talks about, you know, what the country means, and what the Springboks mean to the country, and what the country means to them. You know, and they say the people carried us through, and they're so fitting. You know, they talk about it, and Shock, you remember, like, here, yeah, and you couldn't find a Springbok jersey. You couldn't find, on the final, a place to watch the game. If you didn't book a table on the Monday, you were not watching the World Cup final. And it was such an incredible month. And you know, we all got behind the box, and it was just pork before to actually sum it up. Like, and to hear like Rassi, I got choked up when he said like it's the people that carried us through, because you know, when we were here, like that month, I mean, the box was probably the most important thing. You know, that's, weekends was the stress, the week. I mean, you know, watching people in our lives shock you. We never even dreamt of watching rugby. Finding screens, finding ways to watch games, finding ways to get jerseys, finding stress. Oh, I went to go visit my dad during my parents during the World Cup, and he loves his rugby, but I've never seen him that stressed, that worried. Is Moni going to be okay? It's going to be fine. Like, what happens if one of the scrums get injured? Like the level of panic. And for us to say, like, it's the people that got us through. The thing as fans, that's the ultimate reward, to know that our passion, our love for the box, and, you know, the guys that turned out really the capture of the country going berserk. But that's how it was everywhere. Like,
yeah,
when you saw like four or five players in the documentary, but that's what the country was everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Rassi, there were times in the beginning, because Rassi's been singing the song forever. He's always been, it's about the country. And you're kind of like thinking, like, is he sincere about it? Like, does he mean it? Is this just because of, you know, we won the World Cup in 2019 and chasing the sun? Or is it just because of that? But you go on another 4 years later, and 28th of October last year, and we go and win it, and we come back, and he's crying in the airport, like, he means it. This is, he's not just saying it. It's not just a little bit of something to get the players like kind of G'd up for a game. This is, he lives and breathes it. This team lives and breathes. And I was thinking, now you're talking about like Dwayne winning two, and is it a validation? To be honest, and this is no disrespect to the All Blacks when they won, you know, back to back, but our two World Cups were an absolute journey, man. They 2019 was hard. It was hard. We didn't, no one expected it. We went through a couple of tough games. 2023 was tough. Like, you, as we mentioned, you could pick three other teams to win the World Cup, and you know, you would have expected it. You know, like, sides have gone places, like the Crusaders of old. You know, they're going to win the Super Rugby, so you watch the games anyway, you know, but you know what the result's going to be. And it was different for the Springboks in 2019, and different for the Springboks last year. It was like the emotional roller coaster that those individuals, that squad have gone through, must have been wild. Like, coming off beating France, then having to deal with a shitty England, and I mean, I'm nice when I say that, because they were like all over us, and then going into another 1-point win against the All Blacks. Oh man, poor guys.
I just think, yeah, like, it was a journey. I mean, especially like, and we've got two documentaries. We've got the two sides dealing with the Lions, which was a journey itself, and now seeing it again come the World Cup. And such an interesting 3-year period and interesting year last year. And I thought, you know, the guy at TNW kept it so nicely. And I look, like, you look back and you watch, like you said, if you watch all five episodes, there's so many like unsung heroes and guys that just played such pivotal roles. But Shoki, before we go, who would you say in the five episodes, someone that, you know, like, you expect Rassi to feature a lot, you expect Jacques, you expect Sia and all that. Was there anyone like an unsung hero that caught you off guard in the five episodes? You'd be like, man, I did not expect this at all.
I think Felix, to a certain extent, because we knew what he added, but seeing it, like watching him in the final, picking up stuff so quickly and just saying, tell them it was a foul, like, this is what happened. He called that red card on Sam Kane very early. I think Dion Fury was another. He was featured quite heavily, and he deserves it. He absolutely deserves it. And Matt Pearce talks about the incredible 16-month journey that Dion Fury went on. Well, that's what we're here for, man. Like, we're here for these amazing stories. You know, that's what we want. We want fairy tales. And the Rainbow Nation is all about these little fairy tales, because, you know, we're constantly got issues. We've constantly got stuff like someone's, you know, doing, there's issues all over the show. And we live for fairy tales, and this fairy tale has been going on for 8 years straight.
I know. I think my one is, it has to be Don Human in his bucket hat. I mean, episode four is probably, I mean, the last episode is great. I mean, all my favorite. Episode four, like, you have a scrum episode there, the way he speaks about it and what it means. And I know he's close about preparation. And look, all the Oakland's do is go to his farm, wear his bucket hat, and coach scrumming. I mean, he was brilliant. I loved him. You know, but even the guys who perform in Russ's orders box office. some of the moments, like, you know, remember the end of episode one, you're like, oh geez, you're thinking, this season two of Chasing Sun 2 took us on such a journey. I mean, we had that, the fuck at the end of episode two, then, you know, the eight cock on, I mean, episode one was the remarks thing. Episode two was the eight cock they got from the island game. When we sat there, you're like, what on earth has just happened? Season three, episode three, the most dramatic ending where just out of the blue, like in the middle of where the whole country was like, what's going on? And then Bongi was crying. And then I'm going to say something, my favorite ending, Damon Williams, sir, sums it up perfectly. Okay, job's not done. Steve Chasing the Sun 3. And I thought that was such a fitting way, because that's what the box mindset is. Like, they've celebrated now, they've done all this, they're going, okay, time for us to go back to work. We're on a journey to go 3-peat. And you know what I think? Our coaching staff are such sickos. They want that history. They want that ultimate. I think that for them is the ultimate stamp. Three in a row. Yes, we've done that, but I'm still adamant. Rassie Erasmus does not come back as the head coach if the Oaks don't believe that three is not on.
Oh, you bang on. You talk about Don Human. I did love that scrum episode for a backline player. It's always nice learning a little bit what the guys get up to. But episode five, when Don Human fronts up to the media straight after the Bongi and Bonambi incident or that issue, probably the best person you could put in front of media at that time.
Yeah.
He just sat there. The shadow was just over his eyes. So you can probably see him rolling his eyes every single time the question came. He goes, I cannot comment. And it just, like, it's just running into a wall and you just get stopped every time. It was the best. That Hooker one was amazing. Like, if we're honest with ourselves, and if everyone didn't know it, I'm going to remind you, we had the two best hookers in the world and we lost them. And then we went on and created the third best hooker in the world and he went on to win it for us. But imagine losing. So I've never seen a side have two hookers the quality of what we've had in one team. But just
especially at their peak.
Yes. Thinking about that space, Malcolm Marks being injured, that scramble of trying to, what are we going to do? It's cool. Dion's got this. Everyone's like, you know, then making him ready. And how do they prepare him? And then Dion needs these players. So that changes the landscape of the bench. And then we went on and created a legend in Dion Free. Or I wouldn't say we created. He created that legend, was all himself. He just had an opportunity to show it to the world. But go on and win the World Cup with three hookers like that. And that journey, and that story is wild.
No, it's incredible. But Sharky, our journey has come to an end as well in the rugby, but Chase the Sun 2 review. It's been great. It's been a great 5 weeks. And thanks everyone for tuning in. Thanks everyone for watching. And then,
And just a quick shout out to Jared, obviously Rugby Bits member, but he got a little screenshot of his tweets every day. Follow Jared Wright on Twitter. He posts how many days we've been world champions, and he got a little bit of love from TNW. So thanks to them.
No, I love that. And also shout out to TNW team, Jack Gareth, Evagas Lungani. Oh, wow. I mean, what an incredible job. And all the sponsors, Betway, Spur, Toyota. I mean, thank you for Super Sport. I mean, that's got to give them a shout out. Otherwise, I'm going to be jobless tomorrow. But but I think for giving us an incredible documentary. It's been a privilege and an honor breaking it down. each, I was probably breaking down, it was just an excuse for us to talk about it because it's so great, instead of us talking, instead of just us just keeping our thoughts to ourselves. But we'll still be back. We will record a pod again this week, chat some rugby. We still got URC, we still got Champions Cup coming up, so got the Irish coming very soon, and Sharky, so we still got a lot to do.
A lot. And for all of those that don't know, we'll be providing a Chasing the Sun review all over again, because Tyler's yet to watch it. So we get to do this all over again. Cooks, you know, you and I can dovetail again, but I'd love to him to share his thoughts too.
just for Tyler. But anyway, guys, please like and subscribe. Watch us on YouTube as well. And yeah, enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks, Sharky.
All right, thanks.